Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 67! 67! Yay!
Doing all right. We hopped off the rails a little bit, but hey, we had a wedding to attend.
Yay!
A gorgeous wedding. Big, big, major, major props to PC Herring and his lovely wife, Jennifer Herring?
Yeah.
But that could be a topic for another time, because right now it is the Shared Desk, and I am your host, T. Morris.
Hey, phrasing!
I phrase everything as carefully as I possibly can, and sitting across from me...
Pip Ballantyne.
Don't be defeatist, dear. It's very middle class.
I am middle class, though.
Extremely middle class. Extremely middle class.
And I read novels, too.
Yes, you do. Far too many novels. So, we are here to actually do a quick little intro about what we're going to be playing for everybody.
Because we're time shifting, right?
We are
wibbly wobbly, wibbly wobbly.
Yeah. Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey. We had so much fun talking with Scribe and Scribby.
And we talked for so long.
That's Lauren Scribe Harris and her roommate Scribby. We had so much fun talking to them about young adult fiction. We had to break it up. Otherwise, yes, it was going to be a Mondo super mega show.
And I know most people in America have a very long commute, but, you know, some people don't.
That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it.
2 hours tonight for me.
And it's worked out pretty well so far.
What a fantastic commute. All right, yeah. But the content was so good, I couldn't touch it. So
yeah.
I'm just saying, hey, let's double down and let's do a two-parter episode.
Okay, so travel with us
back in time to the end of October, when we are kicking back with Lauren Scribe Harris and Scribby, and we're talking about young adult fiction, the ins and outs, the whys, the hows,
the roundabouts,
and everything in between here on the Shared Desk. Now we get to item number 4. I'm going to bleep myself out for this, so bring it up. Kids Curse. Fuck yes. Thank you. We were selling to some younger readers today, and or yesterday rather, and I was thinking as I'm passing it off, we got some bad words in there, and I'm like, but you've heard them.
But
before.
You know, we've had that discussion before where most parents are happy to have children have violence in their books, but please don't have the...
So let's talk about both of these elements here, because I think it's appropriate. Because first we got to tell a quick story about Boom. Our daughter had, and I'm reading for the blog post, our daughter had made the jump to middle school, and we were both nervous as she was determined to let people know when they were engaging in what we yes. called in the house Wolverine speak. Because the first time she heard the F-bomb was in X-Men First Class.
And we said,
only Wolverine can use those words. Well, then she became the language police at the elementary school. Mm.
And then she goes, when I go to middle school, I'm going to tell the teacher every time somebody says something bad.
By the second week, she just came in and told us flat out, I figured out I can't do it. I've heard some things. Oh, Mom, Dad, I've heard some things.
Yeah. I anticipated that she would, if she did that, she would just be in the principal's office all day. Just,
right.
You know.
And so, but that's the thing, is that when people...
It's a big change from elementary school to middle school.
And I've heard authors say, well, yeah, I just can't have these kids curse. I'm like, bullshit. I
mean, exactly.
You gotta let these kids... Because, I mean, it even happened in Hunt for the Wilder People.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, he was from the streets. You know, he was guilty of a lot of things. Loitering, spitting,
throwing things.
But that's Hunt for the Wilder People. Look it up. Anyway, so, yeah, before we get into the rumpity-pumpity with the younger readers, what about the language, the salty language? It is appropriate, correct?
I like how J.K. Rowling did it. I mean, again, at my library, the first... 3 or 4 books are in juvenile,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of the series is in YA. So they actually started out in the kids section, and that's why, I mean, I love when she has things like, you know, Ron said something that made Hermione go, Ron! That's a good way to get around it.
That's very British, though.
Yeah.
That's very British.
The very first book has damn in it, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the third book has bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the first book also, Uncle Vernon says, no more effing owls.
Oh, yeah, we do have effing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah.
And
yeah.
she spells it out F-F-I-N-G.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the language goes, we laugh at the library because, well, first of all, when I started middle school, my mother immediately said, you know, well, you can kind of read whatever you want now. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, you're riding a public school bus. At this point, you can read whatever you want. But at the library, you know, the YA section is such a minefield. Mm-hmm. As far as you get the sixth graders all the way up through the 12th graders, all the way up through the adults reading in the YA section. And it can be very different from book to book in every mm-hmm. regard, language, yeah. sex, all that fun stuff. So who are you guys writing for in your book? Like, what age group?
What is your target audience?
Our target audience is, well, honestly, we dedicated the book to Boom.
So it's 12 up, okay. I would think.
I would say 10 and up. Mm. And
you've got language in so there. That's not going to fly.
So it's sort of more middle grade than it is YA?
It's
I'm trying to think how much. I mean, there's some language in there. But, well, we can get away with it because some of it is Victorian swear words, which we wouldn't necessarily call swear words.
But for example, this is chapter 8. This is the opening of chapter 8. 10 days. Moving hay bales, milking cows, shoveling shit of all kinds for 10 days. and in a situation like that, I mean,
there's no F-bombs in
No, we don't go into the F-bomb territory, and I don't think we ever will go into the F-bomb territory, but we do drop a couple of dams, a couple of hells.
Spell effin', like
we could probably go with effin', but I mean, I would say between, you know, 10 and I would say between 10 and 18 is the range, because mm-hmm. you know, if a teenager read this, they would probably go, oh, that was fun. Mm-hmm. And I'd be about the end of it. But I mean, that was the age range that I was aiming for. Mm-hmm. But let's talk more about, I'll never forget this. This is a story from when I was first signing with Moravi. And a woman came up to me and said, what do you think the age range is for your book? And I looked at the book and I said, well, a very mature reader at 14. I wouldn't go anywhere from 16. And she looked at me and she goes, oh, so there's sex in the book. And I said, well, there is one very intense love scene, but there are also scenes of torture, violence, and death.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't matter.
That's exactly what she told me. She said, oh, I could care less about that. I'm more worried about the sex. And I stared at the woman like, you didn't just say that,
oh,
right?
No, it's really funny. We get that all the time at the library. My two favorites are, one, you get the mother that comes in with the 16-year-old boy. 16-year-old boy.
16,
he
wow.
He doesn't like to read. He hates reading. He won't read. I can't get him to read anything. Why doesn't he love reading like everyone else loves reading? And I go, okay, well, let's find him a book. Okay, but it can't have sex, it can't have kissing, it can't have hand-holding, no language, no violence, no that. And you're like, all right.
That's why he doesn't like reading.
I've got some Garfield comics, but I don't think they're going to love it. He's not going to love it. And the other one is that, yeah, I mean, you get parents that go, she's just very protective and I just don't want her reading anything, nothing. And, oh, I'm so scared about the content. And you go, okay, well, what's the last book she read that she liked? I think she read The Hunger Games and The Maze Runner. And you're like, the one where they kill children. Okay, and then they kiss. All right. Do you have any idea what your child's reading? You have no idea. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, when I was my dad never put any holes on what I could ever read.
My parents either.
But me I neither. Do remember reading my first bodice ripper, and I was 15, and I bought it, and I felt very, very adult. And then I read it, and I was like, okay, I'm done.
See, the funny thing was, I was reading the adult. Starbucks. I need more coffee.
Your brain is telling you.
It's morning, people. We're recording in the morning. We usually record at night.
What are you talking about? Yosemite?
But when I started reading the adult Star Wars books, mm-hmm. and in some of them, particularly the X-Wing series, they have sex in it, and they're... It didn't even faze me at that point. And I was like 10. So
it's just,
a lot of it probably went.
I think it depends on the parents a lot about what they want
to. But you know, it's so frustrating because you try to talk to parents about the fact that this is such a book is such a safe space for a teen to experience something where they don't get hurt, but get the emotional catharsis of, ah, that was a bad decision.
Actually, I was talking to one of our neighborhood ladies and she's got a son who's Boom's age. And she was he is on the autistic spectrum as well, but he loves to read, and we were talking about reading, and I said, well, that's a great thing, because I think reading for kids is a great way to expand their mind and get them into a new place that they've never gone to think about things. I mean, if you're a mm-hmm. straight white suburbia kid, reading a book that might have different themes that maybe your parents might not like still expands your mind and makes you more I don't know, just more accepting of different kinds of people.
It's funny because Gail Carriger recently did a post where she talked about when she and I went to Y'all Fest and met Mercedes Lackey and squeed over it. Well, one of the things that we loved so much about Mercedes Lackey is that she was the first person to introduce us to gay characters.
Yeah.
And for me, I wasn't really aware that gay was a thing when I first read those books. And, you know, it's not because I was overly sheltered or anything. I just hadn't encountered it because I am straight white suburban.
Yeah.
My parents are straight white suburban. And, you know, it just wasn't something I'd ever encountered. So when I first read those in, like, middle school sometime, and not only was there a gay character, it was the main character.
Mm-hmm.
It was a way for me to be able to understand that that existed and it was okay. Mm. And more than okay, it was normal.
It was just a thing.
And, you know, the people around that character didn't treat him any differently because he was gay. You know, it was just a thing. So that was, that gave me the ability to later on sympathize and with other people and not treat that like it was anathema.
Yeah. So I want to ask Scribby about that. Do you ever get people coming in like, you know, I just don't, is this book got gay characters in it? I think you should get it out of your
life. We need to have zero gay. We need to have zero gay.
We zero down on the gay.
Yeah, so we had, let's see, when I was working at a smaller library, we had a woman come in who had checked out a Sesame Street book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those, like, you're at preschool and your mommy will come pick you up. We promise. All the other kids get picked up and it's like, don't worry, she's coming. And at one point it's like, you know, here's Johnny's mom and he runs out and gets in a car. And then the other one was, here's Susan's mom and there's two women in the car waving. And this woman was like, I just wasn't expecting it. And I'm like, expecting what? And it needs to have a warning on it. And you should put a sticker on it. And she had some suggestions of the sticker we should use. And I was like, let's not label the gays. That's historically not great. But but we had to.
How about a pink triangle?
That's exactly what she said.
What? What? I'm not kidding. You never told me that. I said rainbow.
I honestly think she was. No, I think she was just ignorant. But but my favorite, and this is a thing that librarians deal with. Honest to God, it is a thing that we have conferences about.
Mm-hmm.
Is in the YA section, do we label? And we've struggled with this because we want the teens to be able to find the books that have gay characters in it or gay point of views. But if we label it with a clear sticker or from a clear section, we risk that teen not being able to take that book home when the parents learn what the sticker is. But if we don't sticker it, it's hard to find. So we've gotten around it at my library by having a list.
Yeah.
And so, last week I had a teen come in and just be like, you know, walk up to the desk. Hi, do you have any gay books? And it's like, yes, we have a list, you know, and as soon as you act like it's no big deal and she was you have a list? I'm like, yeah. And I'm going to hand you the list and I'm going to let you go read them and find out which ones you want and then come and check them out.
Yeah.
And yeah, I encourage honestly not stickering because it.
But I will give you. I will give you an instance, though, when labels were a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was when Tipper Gore decided, you know what? There's some bad music out there. This is me and the musician coming out. This is bad music out there. So we're going to label it with parents' warning, expletive.
Oh, I love that. I love that sticker.
And when that sticker went, you know, I can't remember which rapper it was.
That was in New Zealand as well.
But the rapper when he got the Grammy for best,
wasn't it Eminem or something?
It might have been. No, it wasn't Eminem. But hey, listeners, you know, 703-791-1701. Send in your voicemail. Tell me who this was. I'll probably look it up online. But please do. Come on, go ahead and send us feedback.
Voicemail
703-791-1701. But the rapper when he was making his acceptance speech, he said, "I want to thank Tipper Gore because of her." I think it was Aerosmith, maybe. It wasn't rapper.
We sold out.
And, they got the highest record sales they'd ever had because of that stupid little
because
label.
A lot of people are like, explicit? Hell
yeah!
I want some of that.
Well, give me that.
We joke in the book world that the best thing that can happen to your book is to get your book banned.
We want our book banned.
I begged our cool cool pastors to burn our books because it would help our sales. And I remember
we're Episcopalians. We don't do that.
Yeah.
No,
So what happens? We wrote them both into book
three.
That's
right. We'll make you gunslingers.
Are
you going to burn it now?
No. This is great. So, okay. The final point that I made and the final thing that I figured out when I was writing, YA with my wife, was that number five, even tweens and teens, and I was prepared to get a little feedback on this. Even tweens and teens are a little sick of the angst.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's because I mean, really, it's part of the reason why I have a tough time watching Arrow. And I'm going to put this in media perspectives. I love watching The Flash because, damn it, that's some fun. That's some serious fun. Supergirl, there's a little bit of angst, but I can cope with it because the fun
it's
outweighs
earned.
It.
Yes.
What?
It's earned.
It's earned. But then you get to Arrow, and I'm like, okay, if I, you know, Stephen Amell, he's a handsome man, and of course, he's got them abs. He's got them.
Oh,
he's got them abs.
Can I get a hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
And yet,
if he knocked me out with a gun, I might wake up and think about his abs.
You'd be like, I'm kind of annoyed at you, but
yep. Also slightly turned on.
But if he woke up and he was doing the salmon leg,
I was just about to say
if
that.
He was doing that, I would be like, oh, wait, no,
what
we
happened?
Hate him. No, wait, we're mad at him.
But you would wake up going, I am the luckiest girl in this post-apocalyptic world.
But
I am
seeing a ray
of sunshine.
And it's easy to escape if he's salmon laddering, I'm pretty sure.
But on Arrow, in fact, I remember this fantastic line that Felicity had on a crossover episode with The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
They were all kind of brooding and angsty, and Felicity went, No, we come to Central City to get away from the brooding and the angst. And I'm like, okay, they're acknowledging it.
I think she also said, doesn't it seem like sunnier here?
Yeah. And it's the same damn set. That's the best part. So I wanted to turn it to you all.
Yeah.
Do you think that the teens and tweens are getting a little sick of the angst?
Absolutely. No, and I can't remember what book it is now, but we laughed. I was having some teens tell me, and it was a book, something like, you know, Between Shades of Grey,
mm-hmm.
not 50, Between Shades of Grey. It was one of those like intense, deep, you know, horrific. And I just remember the teens being like, yeah, she's just so whiny. And I'm going, her people have just been executed and she's on a death march. And they're like, yeah, but I mean, all she does is whine. I'm like, but her mother starved in the streets in front of her. And, yeah, but I mean, it's just so whiny. And I'm, guys, no, I understand you're burned out
right.
on it, but like, there is some merit. But yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. Buffy kind of touches on that where you
Buffy,
get about seven
Angel,
seasons in and
I
you're
mean,
like, okay, Buff,
yeah,
we got to talk.
Tapping out.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
and the same thing with Silver Pharaoh. I mean, you know, Verity, you know, her parents have been, you know, they
killed.
They
she's
were killed.
A street urchin.
She's a street urchin now. She came from a very privileged background at one point. And there, we touch on the angst, but we don't dwell on
no
the angst.
No wallowing.
Yeah.
Well, and look at Harry Potter as well. Look
yeah,
how,
he's not
look
exactly
how crappy
Potter,
his Look how
oh
crappy
my God,
his
what a
life
terrible
is
life he's got.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
And then he's such a little sweetheart.
Yeah. and then, you know, the books are so funny.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
another thing is that I think the thing about angst, and especially with teens, is, oh my God, life as a teenager, everything feels like it is the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
much.
You get a bad test grade, it is the end of the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, I recently went back to school. Getting a bad test grade was like, ugh, I'm so annoyed at myself. But it's fine because blah, 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 and I'm still going to pass the class.
Well,
and
that's
all
why
I
laugh because
yeah.
writers often forget that, yes, they had really low lows as a teen,
mm-hmm.
but you have super
high
highs
highest.
And they come back to back often. And
yeah.
for some reason, they mm-hmm. think back on their teenhood years and go, oh, God, I was just so upset. And mm-hmm. they just write that. And I'm
yeah.
going, guys, come on.
Then you got your first kiss or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
well, there is stuff that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those few people that had actually fun. In high school was
oh
it
we
fun?
Had fun
we had a great time
a great
in
high
school.
School
even middle school that was like the low of my life
that was the lowest part of my life
I had,
and I met
I
each
had
other
her right
yeah.
so it's like oh God I hated all of these things and then I got to go to lunch and we got to hang out with her and
mm-hmm.
it was so happy and we passed notebooks and we talked
right.
about the X-Files and
mm-hmm.
they never do that in the books
which
yeah.
they should and that's
yes.
what I think we touched on that
well
with,
yeah Verity
with
has a fun time at the school but
oh,
then
yeah.
she also is like bad things happen.
Yeah, bad things happen.
And bad things should happen.
Yeah,
otherwise,
right.
the teens would be like, I don't want to read this.
this is a little too Pollyanna for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the dividing lines between children's fiction and young adult fiction. Children's fiction is all, oh, we're off on a merry little adventure. And whereas.
I got to mention my favorite book that I like to read, like when I was Serena's age. I like reading The Famous Five and The
yeah.
Secret Seven, which I don't know if they're not very American. They're not here very
right.
much. But for
is
me,
is that the Five Peppers?
No.
Okay.
The Famous Five, it was like from the 60s or 70s, I think. No, maybe even the 60s. It was the 60s. But they had like five kids and they had a dog and they'd go on adventures and the parents featured very They were somewhere off.
Parents
there.
Were
but
idiots.
They were, but they were alive.
They were alive. We you would go home at the end of the day and get a sandwich from them, but they were barely present.
We loved the Animorphs. That was the thing that we were really into in middle school. And the parents were all alive in that one, featured very little in it. But there was a lot of concealing things from parents.
Yes.
And and a lot of, like, big adventures and some complicated things that happened. But for the most part, it was just, let's defeat the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we still publish books like that. Like, I know in the juvenile section, we have the Penderwicks, and their four siblings, and the boy next door, and the dog that goes on little adventures, right. And it's very sweet. And in the YA section, like, I'd say Sarah Dessen's books, they're like Gilmore Girls in writing. It's like, well, nothing actually happens, but they're just so nice.
They have a fun time.
But the thing is that yes, angst has a place in YA, but if it even teens and tweens are like, okay, ease up on the angst a bit.
Yes.
Well, less Arrow, more Flash.
Yes.
You know?
So here's the thing that I noticed a lot was that angst features very highly in fan fiction.
Yeah.
So when you go to fan fiction, you see so much angst of people wanting these characters to deal with things for them.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of the angst
is. It's like
a
pressure valve. Yeah.
It is. It's like, okay, so I am having these issues, so let me offload that onto this character that I care about and have them deal with it.
Yeah.
And that, so you get a lot of that, and I think there is a way to do that with reading as well. But I think that when you have only that, the pressure valve, it's like, think about it like a pressure valve. So you have all this angst, you release some of it, and then suddenly there's not as much to release anymore and you can get other stuff. But when it's not a hose, you can't just turn it on and have the angst must flow. Like, after a while,
Young Atreides, the angst must flow.
After a while, you will drown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the blog post I posted in a nutshell.
We didn't talk about the rumpity pumpity.
Yeah,
we haven't talked about
that.
Well, we touched on the rumpity pumpity.
No, we didn't.
But I didn't.
No said,
touching.
Bad touch.
Don't touch the rumpity pumpity.
Well, I did have a question because I don't want any spoilers, but is there a love triangle in your book?
I don't know if it's a triangle. Verity is attracted. Now, this is calling on my own experience when I went to an all-girls school.
I know where she's going with this.
When there were two male teachers at the all-girls school, one of them taught accounting, which you would think not many girls would be interested in. Suddenly, there was an influx of girls taking accounting.
Wow.
And sitting at the front.
The Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Yeah, the Indiana Jones. We actually have the homage. I'm actually looking it up.
He was, to be honest, he was like probably mid-20s, and he was an attractive young man.
And it was an all-girls school.
We had that at our regular high school, too.
But the other thing was, there was a slightly older man, he probably was in his 30s, who was teaching history. He was American. Girls were taking his class, and I would be like, I can see why the accounting guy, but the history guy. So in the book, do you want to read that little?
Here we go. This is from the chapter called A Class Above, chapter 7.
Verity.
They are sitting in Practical Automaton Engineering. Professor Matej Vidmar.
So he's exotic.
Yeah. Let's see. Amidst the ticking in her head, a small itch in the back of her brain kicked up as she took her seat in the fourth row. She took stock of students assembled for the class. I had no idea, Verity thought, as she counted the amount of female students present, so many women were interested in engineering sciences. Good morning, everyone, came a sultry, silky accent, not like any sort she had ever heard before. As soon as Verity turned to face the front of the class, it became apparent to her the joy of automaton making was not the only reason the class was so very popular with her fellow schoolgirls. Standing at the front of the room, their teacher was the kind of figure no one with a heartbeat would be able to ignore. He was dressed simply yet elegantly in a slate gray frock coat with ruby red velvet lapels and striped trousers, his hands clasped behind him, his straight back, and his gray eyes the color of storm clouds, scanning over the array of students, settling expectantly into the seats before him. Verity could scarcely believe such a handsome, tall man could be a teacher of any kind. Her perception of the word professor brought images of someone older, more worn and rumpled by the world. Good morning, Professor Vidmar, the class responded in unison. I am so pleased to see an interest in engineering. Now, if you'd please direct your eyes up here. There was very little chance Verity would look anywhere else.
So that is directly...
Silver Pharaoh, on sale right now, in print, and wait for the audio. I suggest for the accent, you do your best Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen. Yes. So that was pulled directly from there. But there is also another person in the Ministry 7 who is... a good-looking young man.
More appropriate.
And he's half Indian.
Yes. Ooh.
So there's a little bit of, you know, jungle fever.
She does not. But whether that will develop into anything is, you know...
That's kind of up in the air right now.
Because I have to say, the teens, there are exceptions to every rule.
Yeah.
And there are exceptions to the... I don't want to call it a threesome. What's it called?
Love triangle.
Sorry, wow. YA literature. Okay. Hang on.
Inappropriate.
I'm sorry.
Inappropriate.
Right. So the
inappropriate.
Stop punching that button.
So the love triangle, there are exceptions to it, but for the most part, that's what I hear from teens. Is they're like, oh, it was going along great. I was having a good time reading this, and then they introduced another guy, and it's like, oh, just pick one and move on with your life. They really like the Gail Carriger books, mm-hmm. The YA series, because she has two guys, and mm-hmm. they get into that area of gray with, I'd say, one, if not both of them, but there is a definite feeling of, like, she's not being tugged two ways so much.
It's just two options, right?
There's just two options, and she's not ready to choose either, and they are just very different aspects of her life.
It's like both of them want her, and she's just like, I don't have time for that right now.
And she's straddling two worlds, so she has one in each world. It's more like a social commentary than an actual, like, I know she's dealing with the apocalypse, and she's trying to win her freedom, but who will she choose?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And that was
they're
the thing.
Over that.
We really didn't get a chance to run with the romantic element of either one. We dabbled a bit with
well, Verity's 15, so she's still like
right on the edge of, and I mean, maybe not yet.
When I was a teenager, you don't know that. I think that's probably why people fall back on the triangle. It's like, this guy, then he's a jerk, and then there's this other guy. There is some of that, but I don't the somewhat forced aspect of she must choose between these two.
I was just gonna say most teens that I know, they do move from person to person. Like, we joke about teens being they've got a different love interest every week, but generally speaking, they let go of one and move on to the other, even if it was just from afar going, he's kind of attractive, and then they let go of him and go, he's even more attractive.
Well, and there's also this at least in writing, almost everything, I think, in a story needs to be earned. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the problem with love triangles is that it's often centered around a character that people don't feel like have earned the affection of more than one
person.
Except
they're hot!
Well, and the thing is, the main character is supposed to be the one that you can insert yourself. Mm-hmm. Like the...
Pardon the pun.
Yeah, you're supposed to be in that business here.
But it's called a self-insertion character.
Pardon the pun.
You stop that.
Inappropriate. Inappropriate.
You don't have to do the drop-in. I'm doing the voice. But the idea that that character is supposed to be, oh, nothing special. Oh, you know, the kind of clumsy character.
She's kind of generic.
The very generic character. And then both of the guys are super hot. And it's like, it's that same thing where you see the sort of ho-hum kind of average dude character in Adventures suddenly gets all these hot women throwing themselves at him. But it's the same thing from a teenage girl's perspective, and the people that get annoyed with that are often basically saying, she's not that great, why are all these hot guys throwing themselves at her, almost talking jealously. Mm. And,
correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't feel like many of the main male characters have multiple women vying for their affections.
Right.
The books that I've read, I feel like there's just the one. Yeah. We never introduce a love triangle because no one wants to see a teenage boy being like, but, you know, let's pause from the battle to think Sarah or Sheila. I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, on top of that, we're kind of dancing around it. No one has really addressed, what about sex? Is sex addressed do we do it in young adult fiction? And I think
we do it.
Oh, I believe we do it. The problem is that I think some authors are a little nervous about talking or doing that sexual encounter because they remember their first sexual encounter as a teen, which is pretty much summed up as, or for some people, I mean, I remember my first time with sex, and quite honestly, I wish I could forget it. I mean, it was, it took me a while to go, oh, I get it now. But do authors actually address that? Because the only time I've seen it addressed, that awkward first time, I've only seen it addressed in romance novels, and it's always been a traumatic
More
thing.
More like, dum, da, da!
No, as traumatic.
Yeah.
I've seen it done traumatically, yes, really? in romance novels. Huh. So the question is...
You've read the wrong novels.
Yeah. Oh, have I now?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Okay, great.
My God, I am surrounded by idiots.
You were saying.
Well, it's just that I'm going to bring up John Green again, because I think he got it right. Mm-hmm. He wrote his first book, Looking for Alaska. And in Looking for Alaska, there are two, we will describe them as sex scenes. There's two intimate scenes. Mm-hmm. One scene is incredibly physical, mm-hmm. with little to no emotion inserted into it. Mm-hmm. And they both walk away just kind of going, that wasn't great. Why wasn't that great? The second scene actually involved very little touching, mm-hmm. but they were so emotionally intimate with each other.
There actually
that they...
wasn't any touching at all. They were sitting on a bridge.
Yes.
Oh, talking.
Wow. Can I ask how old were the characters supposed to be?
They were at 16? They were at a boarding school.
I think they were 15 or 16.
Well, and it's so funny because there was a book club that read the book, and they actually got to meet John Green, or they did a Skype or something, and he commented, you know, so I'm getting all this flack for the sex scene. What did the teens think? And the teens all went, what sex scene? Like, they read it, and it left so little impression. That scene left so little impression. They all knew about the bridge scene. Mm-hmm. That other scene left so little impression that they just kind of kept going.
Because there was no depth to it. Well, no, it was delivered in an expository fashion, not in an actual in scene fashion.
Oh, okay. Like so, a flashback, like
No, it was just saying, and then, you know, she comes in, she wants to do this thing, but neither of us really know what we're doing. So then we walked across the hallway and asked this character, blah, blah, blah. She showed us blah, blah, blah with a bottle of toothpaste, with a tube of toothpaste. And then we went back in and it happened. And, you know, then she left and we were both kind of like, what? and that's almost like exactly how it was delivered in an expository fashion. It wasn't delivered in scene. And so, but then the scene immediately after that juxtaposes it because it is in scene. It is two characters, the same guy with the girl that he really likes. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting next to each other on a bridge.
It's so intimate.
And it's so intimate. They're having just a conversation about life. And so he did that intentionally to juxtapose the difference between physical affection and emotional connection.
Uh-huh. And the teens got it, but if you ask any adult, right after it was published... Mm-hmm.
They started calling him a child pornographer.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, according to them, that was like the whole book. And you're going, and all the teens are going, I don't remember that. So it's just really funny. Yeah, sex happens a lot in YA. And even as an adult, I'll admit, as a teen, I read these things without any... Like, it was just fine. I just kept reading because I was more invested in the plot or more invested in the characters or the end result. And as an adult, even I have moments where, you know, I read Grasshopper Jungle and immediately hesitated. Who can I give this to? And after a while, you just kind of go, just give it to the teens. Mm-hmm. They will just, they're fine. Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say, there are some, like, I read a lot of YA. And a lot of what I enjoy about YA is that they will do a lot of the stuff that is up to...
Yes.
A point.
And a lot of that stuff involves a lot more emotion than the actual insert tab A into slot B.
Exactly.
You know, right. That Leigh Bardugo's YA trilogy about fantasy Russia, there is probably one of the sexiest moments I have ever read in fiction outside of like a Jacqueline Carey book.
Yeah.
and I just kind of, and nothing happened. He basically... like, just pushes her against a wall, and they talk after a thing that they, like, after a performance-type thing.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting there, like, fanning myself, going, oh, my! And nothing else happened, and I was just... But that's some of the things that can happen in YA,
yeah.
And like in scene, you can have a lot of stuff happen and they actually address and talk about sex.
Much more emotional intimacy than a lot of the adult books.
Yeah, yeah. And so you get a lot more emotional intimacy than the books where it's just like, okay, let's get to the brown chicken, brown cat.
Yeah, it's that time when you're asking...
Oh, what's in the box?
Inside the Ark are treasures beyond your wildest aspirations.
Time for a Loot Crate looky-loo on the shared desk.
What's in the fucking box?
You want to see it open as well as I.
I wish I would stop grinning whenever I hear this drop in, but I'm real happy with
it. You can't help yourself. So today, we got a twofer.
We got a twofer.
One each, one box each. Yeah. Although your box is bigger.
Yes, I know.
It's probably misogyny.
What does it remind me of?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm not Lauren, so... I'm absolutely in love with her boobs.
It's kind of hard not to be in love with her boobs.
Why did you do a boob drop in for it? It's in a box!
Because this box is bigger than your box.
Oh, I see. Fine. Fine, I see what it is. So are we
going
to do...
We're going with a theme, a Lauren Scribe Harrison, her boobs theme. And besides, we need to get Verena back on the show. All right.
So shall we do a you do one, I do one?
Yeah.
Or should we just go one
that
person
sounds,
goes through
that
it?
Sounds great.
I don't know what this box I've got is.
Neither do I. I mean, okay, so let me backtrack a bit. First, we did a Loot Crate looky-loo for October.
Yeah.
But then these both arrived today, so...
Yeah.
So, and I'm pretty sure this is November. If it's not November...
It must be November.
By the way, lootcrate.com. And if it's not Loot Crate for November, which is magical...
Yes.
And it's got some great stuff in there.
Why are we not opening these boxes?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Hurry up!
It could also be stuff from the Loot Vault.
Oh, you've got
now,
a...
The Loot
did
Vault,
you buy something from the Loot
I
Vault?
I bought a couple of things from the Loot Vault. I don't think I bought anything for Christmas or anything like that.
Okay, well, let's just...
No,
crack.
This is
What have you
well,
got?
I guess we'll find out. Let's go ahead and open them up and we'll find out.
Mine's got like...
All right.
Mine has Invasion.
Invasion. You know what? This is the Loot Vault. This is the Loot
Vault. Oh, you've
got
the Vault and I've got the actual...
No, that's from the...
These are both from the Vault?
These are both from the Vault because
ooh,
I got here
what
a Q-Pop Batman figurine.
Flash from, me that one.
From
oh.
the... Yeah, it's from the 1966 series.
Oh, wow.
In fact,
that.
I remember now what this was.
Yeah.
These are two boxes... From a recent Loot Crate. That's what you can get at the Loot Vault.
Oh, you can,
get... actually get previous crates because we also got one of these.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Star Trek air fresheners. So I got
two. Ooh, I got a new car this week.
There you go.
Can I have that?
Yeah, of course you can.
Oh, sorry, I'm yelling. I'm getting excited. So you did that. I got a Space Invaders vinyl figurine.
Ooh, really?
Over there. This is Invasion. And the inside of the box looks like Space Invaders over there.
Oh, and...
Oh, but look at this. It's a little facehugger plushie.
It's a plushie facehugger.
Everybody loves a facehugger. He's smiling. He just wants to hug you.
He just wants to give you a hug. Look at this. Look at this vinyl figurine.
It's see-through.
It's see-through.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's so freaking retro. I love
it. We've got some cool stuff in here.
All right, so that's
Invasion. Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Multipass. I've got the multipass.
I remember now. I got this one specifically because I wanted to make sure you had the multipass.
I got the multipass?
You got the multipass.
Okay.
Now, I should say we did open up and we did record the Loot Crate for October, which was horror.
Yeah.
And it was actually, it surprised us how good it was.
Yeah. Surprisingly, considering we're not massive horror fans.
Yeah.
Okay, pull out what else you got
so
over
let's
there.
See. What else have I got here?
So how much were these, the Loot Crate boxes?
Well, they're all, that's the thing, because it's the Vault and they're doing a clearance, they're all on discount.
Ooh.
So I want to say I paid maybe $10 for each of these.
That's not bad.
It's not $10, $15. And for this one, I got the Legend of Zelda sweatband. So I can wear,
ooh,
I can
sweat.
I can
you and
wear
Olivia,
this.
Neutron bomb.
Neutron bomb.
Newton John.
I'm trying to remember what this theme was. I want to say it's superheroes.
It looks like superheroes because you got Batman
or adventures, but
or something.
So what have you got?
Ooh, I got the. I'm going to put this in my purse. My new car. Did I mention I got a new car? an X-Files LED flashlight for when you're looking for the bile man.
Yeah.
Or there's some beautiful boys in West Virginia that you want to find.
I got me beautiful boys.
Beautiful boys. That'll help you.
This was heroes. The theme for this one was heroes because I've got a little Loot Crate button.
I got three batteries. I presume.
I'm assuming that's for. Yeah. So I've got heroes there. What else you got?
Okay, I got some mini prints over. Oh, this is really good. We could put one of these could go in our steampunk room, the War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
And
oh,
then
beautiful.
We've got, it's these are the original movie posters and mini cards, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
The War of the Worlds and The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Classic.
Classic.
Classic. So those are, I'm going to put them back in their envelopes.
So you've got multi-pass.
I got multi-pass. What did you get?
I got multi-tool.
Ooh, multi-tool.
I got a Batarang from the Dark Knight, the Dark Knight series, and it's a multi-tool. And how is it a multi-tool? It's a keychain. And it's a bottle opener. There's your multi-tool. So, you know.
Could I put that on my on mine? Because my thing of set of rings is already
you don't
like,
have enough stuff
I
on yours.
I could kill somebody with
yes,
that.
Yes, you could.
I also got a large yellow plastic band. I'm not sure what invasion that's from.
I think that might belong to something.
It might belong to something. I'm not sure. Or the badge was obviously very cool. It's a little Martian space invader. For the badge.
This was you know why I got that one too? Look at the date on it. It's January 2016.
Is the one before we started?
Yeah.
The month before we started.
Because we started in February 16, so now we have a complete set for the
okay. What about the t-shirt? Have you got a t-shirt?
I do not have a t-shirt in here, but what do you have?
What is this? It's a really cool t-shirt of some people.
Shame on you. Shame on you.
Is that
two people running in the woods, chasing after aliens?
What is it?
It's X-Files, darling.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Well, I can't see Mulder and Scully.
You're killing me.
I've got to see the front of David Duchovny to recognize him.
Now, I'm going to let you read this off because I think we should frame this and put it in Sonic Boom's room.
She can do it. And it's Wonder Woman.
It's bomb. And it's DC Bombshell. Wonder Woman.
I don't know if she deserves that, really. I mean, I feel like it might be mean.
Okay.
Well, she gets her own crate. Why are we giving her stuff from our crate?
A little bit of background. We caught Boom in a bit of a lie, and
I'm not feeling.
Let's do some quick theater. So let's say I'm Mom, and let's say Mom is Boom, and I say, Boom, did you lie to me about folding your laundry?
Yeah.
Why did you lie?
Because I thought I could get away with it, which is generally the reason why anybody lies, right?
I should not laugh at that. I really shouldn't laugh at that, but man, that's good.
I mean,
And here was the primary reason I got this. So when we got the horror crate in October, I think the best thing in there was a hardback book that we got from Quirk Books. Those are the people that did Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, but they also did, and it came with the horror crate, a book called The League of Regrettable Supervillains, and I've been reading it,
ridiculous supervillains,
really ridiculous supervillains, and I've been reading it, and it's brilliant. So then I got this was the first book to come out. Mm-hmm. This is The League of Regrettable Superheroes.
Oh.
So I've got both now.
So you got the set. I don't know. This Q-Pop Batman is pretty sweet too.
That is sweet. But yeah, I think that they must have upgraded their pins they did. They upgraded their pins in 2016 because from July 2015.
They're not metal pins.
And well, they're not the die-cast.
No, they're not the die-cast
sharp
ones.
Lapel pins.
They're just a regular round pin.
Like you'd see it on a, you know, like
okay,
in a, like
yeah,
a fans.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate the upgrade.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say that real quick. Loot Crate, thank you for doing the die-cast stuff because that's a little more high class.
It's more high class.
Yeah, than this. Although I wouldn't say a bad thing about the Loot Crate button for July 2015.
It's nice.
It's nice.
But it's not as cool
it's,
as the
It's not
the
as classy
die-cast.
As the other one. It's not as classy
so
as
So is
the
that
other
everything
one.
On yours?
Yeah, so basically it was the this was Loot Crate Heroes box number 2 of Heroes in July 2015, and the heroes featured were Zelda, the Bat, Spock, and Wonder Woman.
So my question is there anything in these two boxes that we're going to put in for the drawing?
Well, first off, Boom is lucky she's getting the poster, because I would want to take this with me to work. But, But yeah, so this was...
This is pretty two pretty good crates, considering you got them for just one thing each.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the Loot Crate Vault, or the Loot Vault, is they basically say, all right, if you want to buy the old crates from previous months, you go in there and you get them at a discount, and you also get them fully aware of what you're getting.
So you can see what's in each box.
Yeah, and I went in to say, okay, you know what? In a previous Loot Crate box, they had the Legion of Regrettable Superheroes, and I thought, yeah, I got to have this because the super
villains.
Did they
have every month?
They had every month that was available, and they had, and some Loot Crate boxes sold out, some didn't. Some of, and they're having a great sale right now, like the Deadpool figurine that's up there. That's on sale now for like less than $10.
It's wow.
Like up there. They have a Doc Brown. They have a Doc Brown Funko Pop where he's got the two things and there's lightning jumping between them. That's only $9.
Wow. So go check out what Loot Crate's got in its vault.
Maybe
pick up some bargains.
Yeah. Loot Vault. We'll have the URL in the shows, so you'll be able to pick it up and see what deals are out there. Okay. We love this. And with that, we are wrapping up this episode of The Shared Desk, and we are also wrapping up this weekend our last tour date, our last appearance for 2016.
And then we rest.
And then we rest.
For a month.
For December. We'll still be podcasting.
Oh, yes.
And we should get back on, we should be getting back on track with our regular, our regular things, unless you wanted to take a month off.
Well, I don't think so.
You like this too much.
I do also. Yeah. But we're about to start work on the Tales in the Archives.
Yeah.
So
We kept saying, okay, we'll get it started in November.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna start with my story, actually.
Are we gonna get started with your story or are we gonna kick it off with the I personally think we might wanna just at this stage of the game kick it off with the Christmas special.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just kick it off in December with the Christmas special.
We'll kick it off with the Christmas special, and then we will get back into regular stories because we have to follow up with some authors. We have to follow up with our own stories. We got to finish Countless Hues of Crimson. We've got to get back on track with the production schedule for the audio version. Well, the audio version of Magical Mechanication should be done by the time we get started with Tales in the Archives.
Yeah.
We're trying to get stuff off the plate so that we don't have like two episodes and then a gap and then an episode and then a gap.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the way things went with this podcast.
I know that Katie Brisky has got her story. She's in the recording stage.
Yep.
Phil Rossi, we just need to look it over and then he can kick off with recording it. My story is already written. I just need to record it. So,
I mean,
we're
ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. Not as ahead as I would like to be.
We never are.
But our last appearance is PhilCon,
which is this weekend.
It's this weekend, and that weekend is the 18th through the 20th. We will be in lovely Cherry Hill, New Jersey, at the official science fiction convention of Philadelphia. Go fig. And
you can see Philadelphia.
Yeah, you can see Philadelphia from where we are. And then we're going to have a month where we celebrate the holidays. So Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate.
Thanksgiving.
We're also going to have a Thanksgiving, of course.
Yeah. If you're in New Zealand, you're probably just thankful you're alive right now.
Dry and not feeling
little,
the shake.
A little shaken and possibly moist.
But everybody's good. And then we've got December off. And then January, we kick things off with MAGFest.
Does MAGFest come before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. MAGFest is the first weekend of January.
Wow. And
then the weekend after that, we head up to the Poconos for the fourth annual Poconos Writers Conference hosted by Michael Ventrilla. Mm-hmm. and this time you're coming with me.
Yes, this time I'm doing a quick look at world building.
And I believe I'll be doing something on writing convincing combat scenes.
Okay.
Which I'll be digging deep into. Well, I was nerding out a bit with Drew in Chicago, and that was good fun. So I'm going to be digging back from my days as a stage combatant to talk a little bit about weapons, about combat scenes, and making them decent.
Maybe I'll sit in and listen all night.
That would be great, darling. So let's see. I'm trying to think of anything else that we have for the rest of the year. I don't think we do. I think we're all... I think
we're just working.
We
want to get Countless Hues out for December, so that's our thing.
And we just...
I have started it.
Yeah.
Oh, I've started
it. And I started it
and
too
today.
And
you're going to finish it.
Yeah, well, I've started it too. I've started the one called In the Playroom.
It's gonna be fun.
It's gonna be ridiculous. I also have a Scrivener file open with several of the worst lines. It has in there. I've pulled in the web pages into Scrivener of some of the most memorable, and I do put big quotes around memorable, lines from 50 Shades of Grey, which we'll be pulling from for inspiration. That's really all that I have. Do you have anything you wanted to share with the audience?
I'm going to be working on the edits with Jenny Meltzer of Immortal Progeny, which I have pushed the date back into March because I wanted to keep it 3 months spread between books that we're releasing.
That's smart.
And so Countless Hues is coming out in December, so Immortal Progeny is going to come out in March, and Operation Endgame is coming out in June. So
yeah,
that seemed like a good idea to push it back.
Yeah.
And Jenny says she's really enjoying it. So
that's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
So remember, everybody, as we're signing off right now, the Share Desk is protected by a non-commercial, no derivative, share alike 3.0 United States license, and that is under Creative Commons. You can find out more about that at creativecommons.org. And with that, we are all done. We will see you in 2 weeks. Until next time, enjoy the ride.
Catch you later.
And I should say, this is episode 67.
Okay, we're doing an intro then for the whole thing. Okay,
yeah, 67. Episode 67.
So he's get to 69.
Yeah. 69.
That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it. And it's worked out pretty well so far.
It does. It does work out very well.
Best bit. I had it recording then, so ending tag there. Okay, all set. 67.
Okay.